All right, good evening, and welcome to the sixth in our scintillating series of budget presentations from our staff. Tonight we are hearing from the departments that, and organizations that report to government operations, and we're starting with assessment and our own inimitable Jay Franklin. So Jay, whenever you're ready, go for it.
All right, good evening, everyone. I have Irene Keough here with me, so if I can't answer it, she will be able to. So hopefully I don't need Dom's assistance here, but... Can you see everything?
Yes, sir, we can.
All right, last week I saw cute pictures of puppies and kittens and chicks and everything, and I'm like, I like those, but I also like houses and aerial photographs. So for your viewing pleasure, along with me talking about our budget, you'll get to take a look at some cool images that we've been able to capture over the years. So here's our comparison between last year and this current year with our expenditures and revenue. We came to you a couple months ago to request more staff, which had their first day in the office today, so we're pretty excited about that. David Ogden and Ezra Nakorntab had their first day with us as assistant real property appraisers, so the increase over last year looks significant, and it is significant, based upon that 12.5% reduction that we had. But if we look at over our target funding of 2020, it's only a 9.7% increase from that. So we had lost five people to retirements or to other departments. And with this, we were able to bring two people on, and I'm waiting to interview again for another batch of assistant real property appraisers to bring them on board. But so far, after one day, I think we hired two good people. So here's our full-time equivalents charts. So we were at 12.2, 12.5, down to 10. That's just not manageable. So this gets us up to 13.7 as recommended by the county administrator. Ideally, we'd be at 15, but we do have one employee currently over in the GIS unit doing almost a full-time position over there. So we're pretty close to being pretty goodly staffed. We do have one over target request that wasn't really addressed when we came to you before. So this would be two project assistants that would help through the months of February, March, April, and May to go through with the informal assessment review hearings that we have, help us with grievance, because as of September 24th, we've made about 17,000 changes of in assessment so far. We're not close to being done yet this year. This doesn't address the commercial properties yet that we'll be also addressing. So we'll be well over 20,000 changes, which should be the largest number of changes that we've had since 2004. You'd have to go back to the reval we did in 2000 to be able to see the number of changes that we had. And even then, the number of changes that we had in 2000 were not that significant. We're seeing significant assessment increases this year. So we'll be busy in February, March, and April. So I think that is it.
Okay, thanks. That was short and sweet. Does anybody have any questions for Jay and Irene? Okay. Annie does. Go ahead, Annie.
Thanks, Deborah. And Jay, thanks for your presentation. I even though you couldn't put pictures of kittens in there, I appreciate the on-site water catchment, timber frame, yurts, tiny homes, things like that. My question, though, is are you guys behind because you were such short-staffed? in the past year?
No, we're not behind with our valuation work. Typically, we'll do our annual equity maintenance programs, those readjustments that we need to do to different market areas. Those typically last through November, and then we start in our annual work. So we started early, knowing that we had a lot to do this year. So we're able to get through there. We are behind in processing some sales in order to get that going, but we had a late start due to some software changes, and so we're catching up to that, and we've realized we're delayed in our sales because school tax bills went out and a lot of the old owners' names as well. But we're good. We have the staff in order to do the work for 2022 with the new people we've brought on. We'll get them trained by March, and with the additional office staff to handle appointments and doing that clerical work.
Thank you.
All right, anyone else? Okay, looks like you're done, Jay. Thank you so much. And thank you, Irene, for your good work.
Thank you. Take care, all. Have a good night.
You too. All right, so let's move on now to the county clerk. And we have Maureen Reynolds, the best county clerk in New York State. This is really a stellar crew tonight. Maureen, are you there?
There, I'm here. Hold on.
Okay.
There we go. A little early, so.
Oh, that's okay. So you're on page 4-41 of the budget book for benefit of my colleagues.
Just get us to share the screen. Okay, so tonight we're going to give you our presentation. As you can see on the recommended budget, we're under. The percent change is negative. However, we came in right at our fiscal target. For our full-time equivalents, we're pretty close to where we would have liked to have been. We had a few retirements, a few medical disabilities, and we've just fully gotten our both offices up to staffing with levels where they need to be. So not too much different there. And the thing I really want to talk about was I've worked here a long time, but I've never seen the real estate market like it's been. So here's some transfer tax. I kept saying last year there's wacky things going on, and it really has gotten wackier. And you can tell by 2021 that the transfer tax, which is what the money that's paid for the county for the value of the property that's sold, it's really high. We just finished September's books, and that was close to $120,000 also. So it's quite a big difference from the prior years. Along with that, you'll see that the mortgage tax, you know, the total mortgage tax in 2019 was $4.1 million. 2020, even with everything that happened, was at $3.9 million. Well, as of the end of September, we are currently at $4.52 million in mortgage tax. So people are buying things. People are mortgaging things. It's just been really fast-paced. Now, with DMV, we had a whole year of jumping through hoops and whatever the governor threw at us. So we had appointments from May of 2020 until the last day of July, and that worked out fairly well. We opened up the beginning of August. At first, it was a little chaotic, but we did get fully staffed up during August, so it's much better now. It seems to be working. You know, little problems with people in lines, but we get them moving and standing where they're supposed to. But it seems to be moving quickly. I went to Google reviews, and they've all been, you know, very good reviews, and everything, the feedback on Facebook and everything has been very good. So I'm quite happy with that. And then during COVID, the Real ID was supposed to start in October, and it has been postponed till May 3rd of 2023. And that's whenever you get on a domestic flight, you will either need the enhanced or Real ID. at that time. So we will have more business ramping up for that as people need that to get on airplanes. And that was it.
Wow.
Autumn said short this week.
You guys are succinct. Does anyone have a question for Maureen? Mike Lane.
Hi, Maureen.
Hi, Mike.
You've done a wonderful job over the past number of years getting us grants from the state for archives. Mm-hmm. And this question is sort of coming from the Historical Commission, who's quite interested in your maps on the walls down in your office.
Mm-hmm.
And wondering about how those are going to be in the future, particularly if your office were to have to move, how they would be preserved and placed somewhere else, for example. A lot of those are fairly unique, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And they're wondering about whether there might be any opportunity for archives grant money to help with something like that.
Well, we've scanned every map. So even the ones on the walls, we've either scanned or take digital photos of that are really good. And we have that all available for everybody to see. So I imagine if we move, we'll just, you know, they're all under glass. We'll just take them with us. We don't have a lot on the walls. Maybe 10.
Well, if they disappear, you should look in Mike's office, I think.
Hush.
No, okay. So they are available for everyone to see already, because that was one of the things that I always said was that, you know, if something happened to me, no one would know where all these treasures were. And now we have them all scanned so that we can share them with everybody. So it's good now that they're shared.
That's good news. Thank you. Martha, you have a question.
Yeah, thank you, Maureen. And my dog is here deciding she wants to weigh in. But so you shouldn't say that. Maybe people will, you know, now that the maps are safe, you may be less secure yourself. I want to ask about revenues. That's really good news as far as that revenue. Where do those – does that show up in our book under total revenues? Is that
– No. So the majority of that money goes to unallocated revenues for the county's use.
Okay.
So it wouldn't be showing up here as much. The DMV revenue shows up here, our portion of what we retain. And one thing about DMV, I don't know if you've noticed, but have you gone by McGuire's? There are no new cars. So there's a global microchip shortage.
Right.
So for a little while, we were concerned because there was no new cars coming in. Then we realized what was happening. But the price of used cars has gotten a lot higher because people can't get the new cars. So things we've noticed.
So is there kind of a budget allocation that, like, we expect to get from the department? And if so, is that, like, on this transfer tax and mortgage tax?
So
how does that – it sounds like we're probably higher than expected this year.
Yeah, and I talked to Lisa about those earlier this year, so they're probably higher, but they don't show up in our budget. I'm not quite sure they show up where they show up. It's some unallocated revenue account.
Okay.
That goes directly to the county every month. It doesn't offset in our budget.
Right.
You're portion of the mortgage tax goes to the towns. I know Rick Snyder takes care of all that. Portion goes to the state and portion goes to TCAT, and that's been a lot higher, their portion. So.
Okay.
I imagine this comes up probably, and Rick would have some idea where it shows up in the big county budget for revenues.
Okay. I don't know if Rick is on the call, or he may just be kind of hanging out. Or Lisa, is there
There's Rick.
Is there a kind of a summary sheet where we can kind of track the revenues from the department, from this department over time? I mean, this seems like meaning not just a normal fluctuation, but kind of like particularly good news this year.
Yeah, I'm not sure if Rick can hear us.
Rick, could you hear me?
Yes.
Okay.
Go ahead, ask me again.
Okay,
they're asking where the unallocated revenue shows up in the county budget and revenues. Because it doesn't show up on my budget.
The mortgage tax dollars?
And the transfer tax.
The transfer tax shows up in 9999, the unallocated revenues. I can pull that up now. And the mortgage tax is recorded in the TCAT unit, which is 5630.
I tell you what, you don't need to do it right now, but if that's something you could send to us later, like just, does the mortgage recording tax all go to TCAT?
No.
No,
there's two different portions. We call the direct portion and the contributed portion. It's pretty complicated, but TCAT gets a part, and I can send you a summary of that, because I think I've answered that question a number of times for legislators in the past and for Jason and for Lisa Holmes. And so I think I can have a canned response. I can give you that formula but it shows up in unit 5630, transportation services, under two different revenue accounts. Mortgage recording tax contribution, mortgage recording tax direct. And the direct part goes to TCAT twice a year, semi-annually. And that's automatic. And then the other portion, we use as a county to defray some of our expense for the money that we hand over to TCAT.
Okay. If we could just get a report like 2019, 2020, 2021 so far, kind of just a snapshot, that'd be great. Not right now, but like both of those revenue sources would be really helpful to have. Thank you so much.
Right. And the other one, the 999 unallocated revenues, that is where we show some of the other revenues that you were speaking with Maureen about just a moment ago. I'm pulling those up now.
Okay, as I said, we don't need that right this minute, but I just we'll look for that report.
Okay.
Thanks very much. Thank you.
Welcome.
Okay, I have a question from Rich.
Hi, Maureen.
Hey.
I'm just curious if there was any real shift in DMV registrations because of the pandemic, people going directly to the state, and has that had any impact on your revenue lines? Did you see it come back in August?
Sure, definitely it's picked up with people going online. We do get a small, weird percentage from the state, and our retention of that has gone up. We're seeing it earlier. We are working right now on the legislative committee for the County Clerks Association. We're working with, NYSAC, and we're hoping to get either our retention increase of what comes across our counter, or we're working on possibly a straight across the board. So what comes across our counter plus what comes on the internet. So that is we're having that in our next meeting, and then it'll be presented to the governor later this year.
Okay. And I had a follow up that's not strictly budget, but you've always been a state leader with organ donation signups. Has that continued through the pandemic?
It definitely has. We're second place in the state. So Jefferson County somehow came out ahead of us this year. We're not sure how. We think somebody counted the votes wrong.
Ah, okay.
We're always first usually.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay, thanks, Henry.
Yes, thank you, Maureen. I just have a quick question about the licenses or the information for undocumented people, and I just wonder how that's going.
I mean, we're doing whoever comes in the door, we try to get them what they need.
Okay, do you see a lot of those?
I do, and I see a lot of people they take the permit test, and they don't pass, even though it's given in their native language. So I think there needs to be more, some more education on our rules, our DMV rules with them, but I see them come in multiple times to take the permit test.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Does anybody else have a question for Maureen? Seeing none, I would say, Maureen, you're off the hook for the rest of the night. I hope you enjoy your evening.
Thank you. Night, guys.
Thanks for coming. All right. So next up, we have Kathy Covert, our legislature clerk. Woo-hoo. Yeah. Woo-hoo. So you can take over screen sharing anytime, Kathy. Show them how it's done. No, I know that. She's done more of these than anybody else. And let's see, that's on page 4-141.
Hopefully nobody joins because I can't see if they're joining us, but that's okay. So this is the recommended budget for both the legislature and the clerk of the legislature. The revenue line is two OTRs, requested as one time. And then we just have a small increase in our fiscal target for two OTRs that have been recommended. And then it's a full-time equivalent. There's no change. And we have four OTRs. The first OTR is the third year of a three-year over-target request for the deputy clerk position. This is being funded with ARPA funding, as recommended by Lisa. And the second OTR is NACO dues. That's been recommended as target. The third OTR is recommended that rollover be used. It's to purchase up to five laptops for legislators' use in 2022. It'll be for some of the new legislators and replacement of maybe one or two others as needed. And then the fourth OTR is to reinstate our computer equipment plan, and that request is for $3,000 as target. That would allow us to purchase two computers or two laptops. And I think that's it.
Well, thank you, Kathy. I guess now you can stop sharing your screen and you'll be peppered with questions,
oh,
I'm sure.
Leslyn's wanting to join us.
Oh, okay. Mike.
So Kathy, what's the game plan? Are we going to have four full-time legislative clerks?
I think in 2022 will be a year we'll really look at that and see how the office should organize. But I think probably within, you know, first half of the year, we'll really be looking at that. And maybe coming forward with some request for 2023.
So
I think it'll give us an opportunity
with four people now.
Yes.
And how are they structured as far as funding?
I'm sorry, how are they what?
How are they structured as far as funding? I mean, the fourth person, is that on a one-time?
That's a one-time, yes.
Okay.
And 2022 will be the third year for that.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, I have Annie and then Martha.
Thanks. I was going to ask something similar to what Mike just asked. The other part of what I was going to ask had to do with funding. I'm trying to remember what department was that administration that is providing for more money to have somebody deal with the technical aspects of having hybrid meetings continue.
Yes, as I understand, it's county administration through the public information program.
Okay. So that will alleviate, you know, some of the technical things that you guys have had to do.
Yes, I imagine so, yes.
Okay. And then we'll learn more as the year progresses, as next year progresses, whether you think you'll need 3 or 4 full-time clerks, it sounds like. So.
Right, right.
Thank you.
Sure. Thank you. Martha.
Thank you. Hey, Kathy. So I was going to ask about, you know, the sort of staffing level. So it seems like one more year of the one time makes sense. I want to know about travel and training. This is where the legislature's travel and training budget is, right? That's
correct.
$15,000 for 2021. And I guess then for the same amount proposed for 2022, right?
That's correct.
Okay. If when we don't spend, like in 2020, you know, nobody went anywhere. Not even downtown. So, does that show up in rollover, or is that just goes, you know, just doesn't continue?
It shows up in rollover.
Okay. I see this about 25. All right. Thank you very much. All right.
Sure.
I just want to say, I think it's, you've all done like remarkably well in all the various places where you're working. And it is, from at least my point of view, it's been really seamless to have people, you know, in and out. And, you know, Michelle is kind of a wandering personality who really is online kind of at all times. It's really been great that we've all managed, the weird new world we're in. So thank you.
You're welcome.
Yeah, I would second that. I mean, between our legislative clerks and, our IT folks and Dominic, we've actually been able to carry on unhindered in many ways throughout this mess, and we do appreciate it.
Yes, and I'd like to thank them, too. They've been a great help to us and always available.
Oh, and okay. If I can just say one other thing. I really appreciate that NACO funding, NACO dues are in here as target. I think that I'm really sorry I didn't jump in and get involved in NACO earlier. I found it really interesting, exciting, fun to meet people across the whole country. I know staff have taken advantage of some of the webinars and the meetings, and would just encourage. I'm glad it's in here as target. I would encourage folks to, to get involved, to get on a committee or two. It's really easy to do and has. There are a lot of benefits to it. So thanks for requesting it. And Lisa, thanks for including it.
Okay. Then we can move on now. I'd love to be able – oh, wait. Amanda has a question.
Just that we're so far ahead. I think there was a typo maybe on the schedule, and if we should maybe let the rural library folks and the public library folks know that we're so far ahead.
I've been reaching out to okay. everyone on the schedule and letting them know to log on early.
Okay. Thanks, Lisa.
Sure.
All right. Well, I'd love to be able to send you home, Kathy, but unfortunately you're stuck here for the rest of the meeting. All right, then. So we will move on to ITS, and I see that Greg and Lauren are here. And take it away, guys. Their presentation is on page 4-120 of your books.
All right. Well, thank you. I'm going to share my screen and get started. Right. Are you guys, can you see my screen? Are you with us?
Yes. It would
All
be really
right.
embarrassing if we couldn't.
That it would, especially after your recent comment. Thank you. All right. We'll get started. The no big changes in the amount of FTEs at all, so pretty much status quo. To characterize where we are now and where we're going is best described in the presented OTRs, but primarily, the first of those is just a restoration, and then the last two are one-time requests for new initiatives that need to be done. The middle one is related to an ongoing increase of professional services, which I'll talk a little bit more about in detail. But no significant differences between this year, other than the reduction that we started the year with, and next year. As you can see, we've shifted from 12.5 in 2020 to 2021 for 14, and that number or that increase is the result of the two GIS employees, one from assessment and one from planning, being consolidated into the ITS GIS group. So it wasn't new positions for the county, it was just moved from departments to ours. The 0.5 difference in 2020 was related to the retirement of an individual and the overlap for the training for that position in the new recruitment process. So no increases in positions for next year. Starting from the top of the OTRs, the first one is just a restoration of funding that we started the year with a cut. So we in order to meet the target requirements for last year, we ended up needing to reduce the budget for travel and training and computer equipment for 21, and we're asking for that to be restored. So our standard is $1,000 per individual or per employee within department per year. The computer equipment is really just the replacement of office laptops in our group, of which we average about two a year. The next one is the biggest one, and that's an ongoing target increase. And there are three big categories in that. The first difference is the increase in costs in Microsoft Office 365. So we have had to add additional licenses for some of the blue-collar employees across the county. So we had to invest in more licenses across the county, and we had to shift from a lower-level type of license in the Office 365 suite to a more expensive one that provides more functionality and more modules as users evolve. And the importance of that is that it does threat protection scanning, so for email. So as attachments come into our system, they're scanned automatically by Microsoft and identified for cybersecurity practices. So that was one of the reasons that we were trying to push for the use of that type of license as opposed to the less expensive one, which does not have that functionality. The third OTR is just a one-time used also to being covered by rollover funds, and that is for the upgrade of an existing tax mapping tool. We're moving to a new version of our GIS software called ArcGIS Pro, and so we have to lean on our vendor to rewrite the custom interface with that we've had in place for the last 5 or 6 years. So that's a one-time use of their professional services to rewrite that and move forward with that. The last one is a project that is funded in conjunction with the Department of Emergency Response through the Department of Homeland Security annual grant funding. But there's the difference would be it's proposed to be a one-time expense, and that's for new aerial photography covering Tompkins County. And that's a product known as pictometry. And the last flyover we did was in the year 2015. So that aerial photography is really important for the dispatchers, for the planning department, for assessment. It's well used, and it's integrated into a lot of what we do online and in the county to provide services for those that rely on GIS. So it's also something that gets used quite heavily by our municipalities, the city, the town of Ithaca, the town of Dryden in particular, when they do land development and planning work as well. So a lot of people across the county use that. There's a big return on investments, but it would take us to have one-time cost to get that flight coordinated for the spring of next year. So that is a quick review of the OTRs. Should I stop sharing my screen?
Yeah, that would be good. Thank you. Well, I have to compliment you GO people. Amanda's got you very well trained.
They have me trained.
Oh, I see. You've had such succinct presentations. Does anyone have any questions for Greg or Lauren? Martha.
Thank you. That was nice, clear and to the point. Question. So you mentioned the aerial photography. You do that in the spring?
Yes.
Before the leaves come out, right?
Yes, that's the idea. So they do have a spring and a fall version, but the spring version is often better because there's more contrast with the green.
It sounds good. I remember when we did it in 2015. I guess I don't know where expenses for the redistricting process are. And do you need different or new software for that mapping, or do you already have it?
There's an online version of a redistricting tool that has been provided by Esri. And so we're piloting that right now for no cost use, and getting familiar with it to decide whether we would need to invest in it to proceed with redistricting. If we do, the cost of that for a year as a subscription basis would be about $4,500. But we don't have an answer until we get through understanding whether that makes sense to use it or we do it ourselves with the existing on-prem software. If we do need to invest in that software, then we would discuss that through GEO. We had previously proposed that for the prior year, but since everything was delayed with the census, we're giving that money back as part of the budget process since we didn't use it.
Okay, so that might be, that's small enough, that could be a contingent fund request next year.
Yeah, that's my thought, Martha.
Okay, thank you very much.
Yep.
Thank you, Mike.
Hi guys. You folks have your IT facility, and I know you have a backup at another location. Emergency response has their office, and I know they're working on their backup. Are these four locations interconnected, and do they service each other? Or are they completely separate from the two departments, or how are they? I'm thinking about an emergency situation. How are they connected or not?
Well, to back up, we have two primary data centers in the county, one in the Annex C building that we're sitting in. The second one has actually has been relocated already to Emergency Response Department at their location. So the dispatchers are sitting next door to the Uptown Data Center. So those are the two. So it used to be in the public health department, but we moved it a little bit closer to improve some of the reliability and the location for that group of users and public safety. The backup center that's proposed in the future for the emergency response department would be on the Cornell campus. And we are now discussing with them and working directly with them on the way to provide networking and routing to that location. We basically treat that location like another county building or an extension of our network.
Okay. I guess maybe I did hear that you'd moved from the health department over. Is it a great idea to have those two facilities in the same building?
We were running into problems with connectivity between the health department and emergency response, which is 24/7, as you know. And so we made the decision to relocate the data center to that building, in particular since they have UPS and generator power, which is a little bit more reliable than what we saw in the past at 55 Brown Road. So the dispatch center relies extensively on our network to operate. They're not in really two separate networks except for the phone system, their phone system, the radio system. Everything else is reliant on the county's network.
Because they're a 24/7 operation, we thought it would be best to move the data center there. There's somebody always there monitoring the location, et cetera.
Thank you. Shauna.
Hello. I was wondering, I know that cybersecurity, especially for governments, has really been a big conversation lately. And no need to talk about our vulnerabilities here or now. But I just wanted to make sure that you have everything in place so that we are secure and that hopefully we aren't susceptible to a data breach.
Well, it's a work in progress. I would turn it over to Lauren, who's heading this up as well.
Yeah, I think we're probably going to, as the legislature as a whole, be bringing something to you at some point. I happen to be on a team working with the NYSAC and also the governor's office, and the Department of Homeland Security is actually just releasing a tabletop exercises for legislature/department heads to kind of, you know, we could sit here and tell you all the, you know, all the terminology, but the tabletop sounds like a really good exercise to do with all of you. And so that's coming down the pipe. There's a lot of things, yeah, in that arena right now. We have been working with, again, the Department of Homeland Security, doing vulnerability testing, penetration testing, web application security testing. And so anything that they've brought to our attention, we've been remediating. So there is a lot of movement in that world. The State Board of Election did give us some really good tools a couple of years ago, about 3 years ago now, potential things that we wouldn't have been able to afford. So that really has helped our cyber footprint greatly.
The second question I had was, as far as private health information that goes through mental health, public health, and DSS, is that handled through the state, or is county IT also in charge of that cybersecurity?
They're all different systems, Shauna. Mental health is a private vendor, and so that they host the application and the data on behalf of mental health for their services and their billing system. Public health is a split between hosted and on-prem, so we do some. It's a little bit different for each division, but the ones. So the healthcare group is using the same system as mental health, but then you've got children with special care needs that uses a completely hosted system. So the shift for that, in the way that technology is rolling out, is that software companies are only moving to hosted solutions these days. So the focus on what they do to protect that and how that's defined in a contract before the county agrees to the software is really important for us to pay attention to in the future.
Okay. And then last question. Does the county have cybersecurity insurance in case
you do not?
Okay.
I'm going to pass that one on to Lauren. There's a good reason we don't.
Yeah. So we've been talking about that with Jesse from County Administration. We've gotten some quotes. To be honest, we're just wrapping up a project, which will, help us be able to go out and get cybersecurity, insurance quotes. So we'll probably be bringing that back to you at some point soon.
Yeah. So there's one piece of the puzzle in the technology side of things that we have to put in place for any insurance company to even consider us. And that's something that all of you are not going to like, and that's multi-factor authentication.
Yeah, and most counties are going through the same thing. Unfortunately, the counties that did have cybersecurity insurance, their rates have shot through the roof recently too. So, yeah, not looking forward to that conversation.
Thank you.
Well, on that cheery note, does anybody else have any additional questions? Martha?
Yeah, that doesn't sound like $4,500 out of the contingent fund, am I right? Should we be looking at a number?
Yeah, no, that's a much bigger project and discussion for another day, please.
Yeah, and the question becomes, you know, is that insurance that comes out of, you know, a risk, you know, a different department potentially?
Okay, you're going to blame it on somebody else. All right.
That's where I was going. You got me.
Good.
Okay. Nice try. We know whose fault this is. I will say that the Soil and Water Conservation District looked into cybersecurity insurance, and it was not inexpensive by any means for that very small organization. So, yeah, this is not a conversation that we legislators are going to enjoy for many reasons. Anyhow, is there anything else for Greg and Lauren? All right. So, gentlemen, have a lovely evening, and thank you for coming.
Great. Thank you.
And we will move on to the Rural Library. Are they here? Sarah Glagowski is here, so I think.
And Susie Gutenberger.
Yes, we've got Susie from Lansing also.
Okay, hi Susie, how are you?
Hi, good, how are you?
All right, ladies, take it away.
Deborah, can I just make a comment? Diane Pamel, I think you need to accept the request to become a panelist. If you can hear me.
Should I get started?
Sure. Yes, thank you. And this is on page 5-26 of your books.
Okay. All right. Can you see that? I'm trying to share my screen.
Yes, ma'am.
Good. All right. I will start out with my part. The recommended budget, which I'm sure you all have seen, and our target request of an increase of $20,000 for the rural libraries in the Finger Lakes Library System funding restoration. We did keep this very brief, and I will go through quickly. I know you guys have a lot to get through, and this you guys are pretty supportive of us, so... The first thing I'd like to say is just a great thank you to all of you. The legislature has been historically very supportive of the rural libraries and the system, and we thank you for your continued support and your understanding of what we do. And we can't thank you enough. It means a lot to us. And the money we get from the county is significant for all of our libraries. So we are asking for a $20,000 target request to restore us to 2019 funding levels. We share, for those who might be new, just real quickly, we do, that money is a portion goes to Finger Lakes, which, Sarah will talk about, and then, the remainder of that is divided equally between our rural libraries. The $20,000 restoration in, funding request is due to we have small staffs and we don't pay a lot. In order to keep competitive and to keep our employees, we will need to work towards increasing our hourly wages in to 2022. Just a few highlights: the Dryden Library, you can see, will need to add an additional $8,632 to their 22 budget to provide with the increase in the hourly wages and to retain the staff. In Lansing, we will also be keeping with an increase in wages to keep staff, and we are a Tompkins County Worker Center living wage. We're certified with them, so we need to keep up with that. And when I spoke to the Worker Center, they were anticipating a small increase for 2022. They're working on that right now. Let me see if I go to the next slide. The Groton Library will need to add an additional 7,872 to maintain their hourly wages with the increase in minimum wage. And the same with Newfield, and also Trumansburg is a living wage employer as well, and so is Newfield. And we need to be able to keep up with programming and meet the other needs of our communities. Hopefully I'm not going too fast. Another thing that we're seeing in libraries is the average book prices are increasing every year. And we need to, the system and the libraries need to keep up with the demands of e-books. The cost of cleaning and maintenance services are increasing. And I already talked about that. And I just also wanted to say that the Finger Lakes Library system services are invaluable to the rural libraries. Rural libraries, as you probably know, all libraries are great at leveraging tax dollars and funding dollars. We share services and we leverage those dollars to the maximum potential. And Finger Lakes services really help us to share services and to leverage those funds in an effective way with all of the different sharing services, the databases that we have, interlibrary loan, computer services. So your money, the county money, goes a very long way for services, providing important services to our rural communities. And then I just had some nice pictures of what some programming that we've done, and to thank you for your time. I realized I rushed through that. So are there questions?
Okay, if you'd stop sharing your screen, I'll be able to see the hands that go up.
Okay, let's see if I can figure that out. Stop sharing here. Thank you. Sorry.
Great. Thank you.
Going back into work because you guys were so fast. I was at the grocery store when I saw Sarah's email.
Yeah, this part of the process generally goes along fairly nicely. It's the next part that gets complicated and time consuming. Does anyone have any questions for the ladies from the rural libraries? Martha.
Thank you. And Susie, I hope you were able to check out, you know, and I hope nothing's melting in the car.
No.
So I'm looking at the budget, our budget pages where it says 2019 actual, 2020, 2021. And it looks like, in fact, that $20,000 target increase does not quite get you to the 2019 level. My book says, with this OTR, you'd get to $190,797, and in 2019, you're almost $7,000 more than that.
I'm sorry, that was my error. So it doesn't quite get us there. I was trying to go on, that's maybe what Finger Lakes, I was going on what I had actually received that year. So you're right, I'm poor math. It does not quite get us to 2019.
So have we been historically giving you a 2% increase a year?
Yes.
Okay. Sarah says yes.
Yes.
So if you could extrapolate from, you don't have to come up with this right this minute, but if you could take 197,349, which looks like your 2019 actual, and if you could send us the figure, what would it take to have a 2% increase for 2020, 2021, and 2022? To get us to where you'd actually be if you were on that 2% a year trajectory. Okay. I'd be very interested to know that number.
Yeah, I can definitely send that.
Okay. Thank you very much.
That's a great question.
I take it you wouldn't mind actually being brought to, you know, the right trajectory.
Yes, that would be phenomenal.
All right. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
Mike Lane.
I always disclose that I'm a trustee of the Southwark Library Association. I don't know if I have so many questions, except how on earth did you folks manage to do as much as you did for our communities during the pandemic? This was a place that people got services even in the early part of the pandemic when everything was closed down. And I know at our rural library in Dryden, folks were very appreciative of that. And I'm sure that you all have stories about how you managed to do curbside collections and all of that. And I think it says a lot about what our rural libraries are as far as community centers.
Well, we thank you for those words. That's very, I will tell you, I think I speak for all of us when I say it's very difficult to run a tax-funded organization when you can't let people in the building. And it was very hard to figure out how to change and pivot and to best serve our communities. We did many different things very early on. One of my staff took the phone numbers of all of the elderly regulars that came in that we knew were living alone or might need extra services. And she called them all each week just to check in and say hello. And then we quickly started driving them books when we could, when we, you know, realized that it was safe to give them books. We started curbside as soon as we could and the virtual programming. And we all did the take and make crafts where people could come and pick up adult or kids, family crafts, story time kits. I know Dryden and Diane did a ton of outdoor programming that was just amazing. And we just, you know, buckled down and figured out how to keep our staff safe. And I think we all had great staff that just really stepped up and wanted to provide as much to our communities as we could. It was really hard those first few months not to be in the building and providing any services to the community. So I was hopeful that we'd be in person programming by now, and we're not quite there yet, but we are open and we're all working really hard to do good services. So I thank you for seeing how much we're trying to do.
Yeah. Our motto became, there's no such thing as bad weather. It's just the wrong clothes.
I have so many golf umbrellas. I have, my staff were great. I was like, I bought two pairs of boots for my staff because they needed rain boots. And I was like, I'm just going to get them for you. I'm sending you out in the rain and the snow every day down my terrible steps. Our staff are really amazing.
Mm-hmm. So, Mike, I'd like to take the opportunity while we're here to speak as the system, Finger Lakes Library System. I'm Sarah Glagowski, Executive Director of the Finger Lakes Library System. I'm here in support of our five rural libraries tonight. And I just want to thank all of the libraries in Tompkins County of all the hard work and dedication they've shown during the pandemic, which is still ongoing and seeing ramifications in our libraries. Our libraries had to close suddenly, as you know, in March of 2020, but shifted really over that weekend to provide online virtual services and a shift in programming and offering e-content that they continue to do to this day. So library services are back, whether they morphed into a virtual setting for a few months. All of our libraries reopened in our system in late spring, early summer of June 2020. We are back to doing delivery. All of our libraries are back to allowing people in their buildings, offering programming. A lot of our libraries have shifted to outdoor programming to offer safe meeting spaces for families. Diane in Dryden is a powerhouse of outdoor programming and really did continue to do outdoor programming even in the winter. We've seen that throughout our system, of just kind of showcasing all of the great opportunities our libraries have to offer library services safely to all of our patrons. So we're still seeing this. We're seeing this in the ask, you know, the figures that you've seen with Susie tonight of where we are in terms of retaining staff, attracting staff. Some of our libraries have lost volunteer usage over the year because of the pandemic. So we're kind of working with all of our libraries to bring back volunteers to be able to attract and retain library staff in our community. And our libraries are working harder than ever to provide services still to this day for our libraries. And part of this funding, obviously, that we receive from Tompkins County goes a long way in offering those services to all of our community members. So thank you.
Thanks for those comments.
Yes, you're very welcome. And thank you for the good work that you've done throughout this pandemic. I think Mike Sigler has a question for you.
No, I just, I also felt the need to make a disclosure. I mean, this isn't going to affect my vote either way, but, you know, Cora Gaffney did win the summer reading, my daughter, the summer reading program logo contest.
She I don't did. Want anyone to I think don't have an extra that, bag.
will cause a difference in my vote. So,
are you sure?
I'm pretty sure.
I gave all the bags away. Even had to order more. So, and I don't even have one myself.
You could have sold them, Susie, to make money. That's how good it was. I also wanted to mention that Susie, you know, while she was great at getting books out in the rain and snow, not so great with the rain inside the building. So, that was
yes.
all. My-
We did have a leak in the library. Our skylight gave up in the foyer, and we had 15 gallons of water on the floor one morning. Oh. Books were harmed in our flood, which is pretty amazing when I have about 25,000 volumes in my library. So we are getting through it, and we're still trying to repair it, but my foyer ceiling was mostly damaged. And so unless you look up, you don't notice, and we've got a tarp over it. So we are going to have to do some pretty serious maintenance on our building this year.
You're going to have to buy umbrellas to go with those boots.
Yeah, we got a lot of buckets. Contractors are hard to find right now. You know, any.
All right. Okay, Annie has a question.
Thanks, Deborah, and thanks for your presentation. And really appreciate all the rural libraries being so flexible, creative, and dedicated through this pandemic and at all times. My question has to do with access to the public. I know here in the town of Ulysses, due to a couple of different issues, including construction delays, we're not fully open to the public just to be able to wander in and at any time. So just wondering, you know, if you could say quickly how the other libraries are doing with that.
Yeah, I can answer that for you, Anne. I am actually spent part of this afternoon working with the board of Ulysses because there are some something called minimum standards for public libraries, and part of those minimum standards that all libraries have to abide by to be open for business in New York State and receive state funding, et cetera, is a minimum standard for hours. Currently, in New York State, there is a relaxation of minimum standards for hours. So that looseness of allowing people in your building, still offering curbside or contactless pickup is still allowed. Appointment only, which is what Ulysses is doing in Trumansburg, is still being allowed. That is changing on January 1st of 2022. The minimum standard for library hours will have to be strictly enforced and fully open to the public for all public libraries in New York State. I am working with the board of Ulysses Philomathic in Trumansburg. There are some delays for HVAC parts that are delayed because of the ongoing pandemic, but they are hopeful to be open without appointment, so people freely walking in to be able to use their building in the next couple of weeks. However, they are understanding that the parts are taking longer than needed. Currently, that library is our only library that is solely running on appointment-only hours. Everyone else is more open up, but it is something that I am working with the board to be able to open up more. And they understand that they will have to meet those minimum standard hours and be freely open as of January 1st, 2022.
Great. Thank you, Sarah. And as you know, we have a new director, too.
Yeah, she's coming next week. Yes.
All right.
So, Anne, I was just going to say, in answer to your question, in part because of our addition that allows us more space, we reopened in August 3rd of 2020 and have been open to the public since then. For everything but programs. I don't do story time because they've been very busy. We have probably 40 families come, so we do it in the park. But we're just, so we have been able to open.
Great. Thank you.
All right. Well, thank you to the ladies of the library system and rural libraries. Have a lovely evening. We appreciate your input and we appreciate your good work.
Thank you.
Thanks. If you don't mind, I'm going to stay on and support our central library, Tompkins County Public Library, who's up next.
Oh, yeah, that's fine.
Sure.
I'm sure they appreciate it. And we have Teresa Vatican and our old friend, Blixie Tetch. Hi, Blixie. We've missed you.
Hello.
All right. All right, ladies, you can proceed when to put your presentation up on the screen.
And we'll do that.
And the library is on page 5-38 of your budget books.
Okay, are you seeing it?
Yes, ma'am.
Wonderful. First of all, I want to thank you for the opportunity to meet with you tonight, and thank you for your dedication to serving our community during these challenging times. We know this firsthand. We'd also like to thank our trustees, the library staff, the community, the Friends of the Library, and the Foundation for supporting us tonight. My name is Teresa Vatican, and I am the acting director of the Tompkins County Public Library, while the search for the library director continues. I would also like to thank the department heads, Sarah O'Shea and Jen Schlossberg, for their help in creating this presentation. Thank you for your support in supporting our collections in the 2021 budget. With this funding, we were able to increase access to our collections for rural libraries. This includes serving some of our most remote community members, such as those in Enfield, who we are serving in a partnership with the food bank to deliver requested items to the Enfield Elementary School. The members of Enfield have been really appreciative of getting these items. Additionally, in early 2021, Amanda Champion and Shauna Black approached us about helping fund our Literacy Inside and Out initiative with the Tompkins County Jail. We had started that outreach in 2019. It was put on pause due to COVID. But just recently, we learned that starting this year, they do have a digital classroom now, and we will be able to Zoom in to do literacy activities with the jail. So Sophia McKissick, our outreach librarian, has been in talks with Captain Bunce from the Tompkins County Jail, as well as TST BOCES, our partner that we had partnered with originally. So that's really exciting. Necessary county appropriations, in addition to other revenue losses, impacted the library in many ways, but was most detrimental with regards to staffing. A library is not just a building of books and materials. The most important part of our library is the staff and how they connect patrons with the community and information. Libraries listen to what the community needs and respond. Library staff connect the community to the library. As you can see on this FTE chart, we have reduced staffing substantially in response to these reductions. Pre-COVID, the library is holding steady at approximately 43.1 FTEs. We were forced to reduce our numbers to 36.9 FTEs in 2020. We avoided layoffs by using retirement incentives and PPP funding. The 40 FTEs shown here include staff we are requesting funding for today. In response to the loss of staff, we restructured in several ways to maximize efficiency and to serve the community in the ways that it needed. We adopted a whole library approach and cross-trained on service desks, and all departments joined together to make curbside delivery a success. As we trudged through snow, rain, and fall, leaves falling and everything, we creatively filled essential positions by using one-time PPP money to meet staffing requirements. TCPL also serves as a central library for the Finger Lakes Library System, supporting 33 libraries in the five counties served by the system, including the Tompkins County Rural Libraries, who we just heard from, and directly supports community libraries in Danby and Caroline. Central library services are mandated as per New York Code rules and regulations. These standards include the number of hours we must be open, a collection that serves not only our community, but all of the libraries of Finger Lakes Library System, and also providing reference services and continuing education for the member libraries. State requirements for library hours were waived during the height of the pandemic, but now, as these waivers are gone, we had to return to being open 60 hours a week as of June 2021. We are also governed by New York State fiscal requirements, also known as the maintenance of effort. Failure to meet these fiscal requirements result in not only a 25% cut to the Tompkins County Public Library, but a 25% cut to the Finger Lakes Library System. This slide shows our total request for 2022 and the recommended budget for Tompkins County in funding with a total increase of about 9.27%. To give you a full picture of 2022 projected revenues for TCPL, this slide shows our total budget of $4,306,327. It includes county, state, town, city, Friends of the Library, and the TCPL Foundation. Here are the projected revenues for 2022 displayed in the chart. As you can see, Tompkins County support translates to 83.7% of our revenue. Tompkins County support ensures that the library meets the needs of our community. Funding received from the Friends of the Library and the TCPL Foundation are critical for funding our collection. Thank you to the Friends for operating the book sale and funding our collection. Although they weren't able to contribute as much in the past because of decreased fundraising, the foundation was able to give us funds for the collection, which we are grateful for. This slide shows the projected 2022 expenses with salary and benefits, comprising a large portion of these. Total expenses are $4,306,327. Salary and benefits added together are $3,421,413, exemplifying that the bulk of our spending is in salary and benefits. As you can see from the chart, salary and benefits are approximately 80% of our total budget. TCPL staff are our most essential investment. They have met this moment and made us stronger. As you can see, your support of the library is crucial. Because of the impacts we mentioned previously and our role as a central library, we have two over-target requests: partial restoration of staffing and contractual services, and library operations maintenance. To return to fully normalized operations, we are requesting funding for a partial restoration of staff. Additionally, we are asking for library operations maintenance. This represents an ongoing increase in our fiscal target to maintain operations. It is equivalent to a 2% increase in its fiscal target for both 2021 and 2022 to cover our contractual obligations. We face the same salary and benefit increases each year as county departments do, and without ongoing annual increases, we will be unable to maintain our staffing levels. We thank the Government Operations Committee for the opportunity to showcase all the library has accomplished this past year at their meeting on September 2nd and share our vision for the future. As we continue through the pandemic, we are constantly reevaluating services and meeting the needs of the community. Pivot, pivot, pivot has become a major term we use. As we said before, we want to respond to our community's needs, restore our regular services, and we want to reimagine what the future of the library will look like. There is no denying that the impacts of COVID change library services, and these changes are here to stay. With your ongoing support to restore and maintain our staff levels, we will be able to utilize our one-time PPP funds to meet the needs of the future. This includes upgrading our technology in our digital lab in the Borg Warner community room, expanding our programs and outreach to meet patrons where they are, and continue to focus on increasing our digital collection, which is growing ever more popular. Just recently, we learned of a partnership with Cayuga Medical Center to provide telehealth at our library. And I know Lansing had been doing this. This is going to broaden the availability of healthcare for everyone in the community, and it's very exciting. Thank you again for having the library here this evening. I hope this gave you a clear picture of what TCPL is requesting and why we are requesting it. As this quote by Timothy Healy from New York Public Library mentions, the most important asset of any library goes home at night, the library staff. The library staff here have been resilient, creative during this time, and we hope to continue this as the library moves forward. I know firsthand, libraries really do change lives. I've had patrons that got a job. He calls me annually to tell me he's still at that job. He gave us donuts. I've worked all over the library in different roles in different libraries, and we do change lives. So I'm happy to answer any questions you have tonight. Additionally, you're welcome to reach out to me if you have further questions at a later date or would like a tour of our library. Thank you. It's a true pleasure to represent TCPL tonight.
Thank you, Teresa, for a very compelling presentation. If you could stop sharing your screen, I'll be able to see if people have their hands up. Meanwhile, Mike Lane and Amanda both have questions.
I was interested to see by the way, Teresa, very nice presentation. Thank you. And everything I said about the rural libraries and the pandemic goes ditto for TCPL. I know it's a little harder to get open as quickly because of the size of the library and everything you had to go through, but it was a terrific thing for our community when it got going. But I was wondering, something I've always been questioning is the contribution from the city of Ithaca. I noticed it was even less than the town of Ithaca now. I wonder if we're hearing anything from them, if they have any indications on trying to change that.
Well, I know we've requested that the city match the town support for Sundays at $15,000 for 2022. And we also requested that from the town of Ithaca.
Yes.
So I don't.
Okay, well, I appreciate it, but when I saw those figures you put up, that made me wonder. Thank you.
Okay.
Go ahead, Amanda. hi, Teresa. Hi, Blixie. Thank you so much for being here. And I'm delighted to see you in this position, Teresa. It's awesome.
Thank you, Amanda.
I actually had a similar question to Mike about the city and the town, and I guess maybe you haven't heard, because the city's funding is based on their sales tax, right? So mm-hmm. Have you heard, is it going to be down at all this year, or you haven't maybe heard from them yet?
I have not heard from them yet.
We don't have a projection
yet.
Okay. All right. Well, maybe I'll tune into the city's budget presentations and see what they have to say. And I just wanted to remind everyone that the Friends of the Library sale starts this weekend, so go buy some books.
Yes, please do. We are forever grateful to the Friends of the Library for their support of our collection and all that they do.
Thank you. Martha.
Thank you all. Teresa, that was a great presentation. I wonder if you could send your slides to Kathy Covert and have her share them with us. You had a lot of really good information in there.
Of course.
I actually didn't catch the number that the city's contribution is. What was that number?
15,000.
The city?
We've requested it from the city, yes.
You know, what was it last year?
In 2021,
we received the sales tax revenue.
We just received sales tax revenue. And in 2020, we requested 10,000 for general support and received 5,000 reduced 25% in the third and fourth quarter.
Did you apply for ARPA money from the city? And they're doing a different process than we are, and I know that they have already solicited, asked for requests for their American Rescue Plan funds.
I am not sure, but I can definitely let you know, Martha.
Okay, and I think the mayor is going to unveil that, his ARPA allocations as well as the regular budget on Wednesday night. So, all right, thank you very much. I appreciate, you know, as I said, the very interesting presentation. And I know that the BorgWarner Room served, especially during the depths of the pandemic, you know, you did something just amazing by opening up your room to people from the street. And
yes,
you know, it was, I'm choking up right now. Yeah, you did a true community service. So thank you.
Yeah, Loaves and Fishes was great. And we were able to help a lot of people. I actually have that number, but not in my head right now. But yeah, it was wonderful.
Just wonderful. Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay, are there any other questions? Well, Teresa, I hope you appreciate how much... Oh, Blixie, go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't do the proper hand raise. I just wanted to make a brief comment to thank everyone and to acknowledge the terrific work of the staff and to mention that we have a lot of trustees who are watching your streaming version who didn't Zoom in. And I just wanted to make sure everybody knows they're out there because we're all very excited about our future and very happy to have Teresa serving as our interim director. So thank you.
Yeah, the library has incredibly activist trustees. We know that. We know they're watching. I just want you all to know how much we appreciate the services that the library provides and you all appreciate the fact that you could not have a more ardent champion on the legislature than Amanda Champion.
Thank you.
Okay. All right, then. We'll be moving on to the county attorney.
Hello.
Hey, Jonathan.
Hi. So my slide presentation is four slides, and one of them just says county attorney, and one says we have three employees, so I'm gonna.
Well, this should be quick. Then.
I'm just gonna bag that. There's one important thing on it, and I'll just discuss that. The over target request, which is $28,091, it doesn't represent any change whatsoever in the program. That's the money we've received from solid waste. Most of it's part of my salary. A little bit is part of Erin's salary. And that was always more personal to me because I was a solid waste attorney. And when I came to the county, they were spending a lot of money on outside solid waste attorneys. So they got to save that and they agreed to pay a portion of my salary. But now that I'm leaving, they don't intend to continue to do that. The only real difference is that the money that comes from solid waste is out of the solid waste fee, and all the rest of the money obviously comes from the tax base. But there's really no change in our programming whatsoever. Obviously, there'll be a new county attorney, and there may be some discussion with the next county attorney, but this doesn't have any change at all.
So do we get to see these slides, or are you just going
to... But do you really want me to show them? I mean, I could.
Yeah.
Okay, hold on a second.
Your last time, Jonathan. Go for it.
Yeah, this is one of those moments you're going to remember forever.
Okay, do you see it?
Nope.
No.
No.
See you now?
Nope.
Really?
Really? Maybe you ought to just talk about them. Or you can send them to Kathy and she'll get them to us.
Hold on here. Okay, got
there it
now.
Is.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah, so this is it. Like I said, that one says our name. this one has the 28,091, but otherwise it's the same. The next slide as the full-time equivalents, which is two full-time people, me and Aaron, and two half-time people, Susie and Bill. And then this again says the 28,091, which is just what I was talking about. So that's it.
Okay. All right, now you can stop. Does anybody have any questions for John?
That's why I thought it was kind of underwhelming.
Well, no, but I mean, we want to do the song and dance.
Okay.
Because it's your last time. Does anybody have a question for Jonathan? Doesn't seem like it.
Okay.
All right. Thank you so much.
Okay, thanks very much.
I think, yeah, he gets a prize. That's almost as short as no comment.
Okay. Bye-bye.
All right, so now we just have the Board of Elections. Let's see, where are they? There's Steve DeWitt. I see him.
Hi there. Can you hear me?
Yes. Is your recently appointed Republican counterpart going to be joining you, or is it just you?
Yes, she's. We're kind of using the same screen, but Tamara Scott is here with me. We're ready to do a presentation. We'll keep it brief.
Hi, all.
Hi.
Can anybody else see the video? I don't. I just see a black box.
You know what? This is awesome.
Try it now. We're all masked now. Thank you, Martha. That was helpful. All right. So, Board of Elections, looking forward to 2022. Just to give you a little preface before we give you the numbers, 2022 is going to be a redistricting year. We're likely to have new state senate districts, new assembly district, new congressional districts. And it's a governor election year. We feel that there will probably be primary elections countywide involving each of the two major parties and possibly other parties. Beyond that, the new initiative that has passed both houses of the legislature and is likely to be signed by the governor will require us to begin tabulating absentee ballots on or before Election Day, which is, you know, way different than we've ever done it. We're likely, if these two, the two items pass referendums in November, we're likely to have no excuse absentee voting, and we're likely to have same day voter registration. Our budget reflects, even number years budgets we've had in the past. And I'll just note that you won't see any computer equipment in our budget because at the beginning of the process, we were asked to go through IT and get recommendations on what they felt we should need for computer equipment. They gave us the recommendations and we were able to purchase the equipment. Haven't received it yet through rollover. So, with that, I'm going to share the screen and try to share the screen and switch it over to Tamara. Share screen. Where is it? Yep. Hit that. And then I don't know if that does it.
Sure.
Yep. There we are. Well,
we don't have many slides either.
So, that's what we'll do. I guess we're going to have to go to the...
Just click the next thing.
Where? Here you go.
Yeah. So that. There you go. So, you know, our budget is similar to previous even numbered years. We were able to use I'm going to do this next slide, right? We are the only thing I think that we've really added is a new FTE for a tech that will start up next year. And So that brings us up to 8.15 people. I don't know how the 0.15 works, but hopefully they show up. And our we did use a rollover, like Steve. Oops. Rollover, like Steve said, to do to order a computer equipment that we hope to get in by before the end of the year, new laptops and all. But bringing in the new voting machine tech, at least full time starting next year, will be very helpful because we have, you know, lots of new things, as Steve said, coming down the pike. Providing all the amendments on the November ballot pass. And we're doing, we put in anticipation of one of the new things coming down for no excuse absentee. We're just going to need more postage in our account based on we spent about 80,000 or so last year in postage just with that election. So I'm hoping to have a better control over it this year. We brought in, they asked for more money. And then adding to our clerk line. We bring clerks in around election times to help us get ready for the elections, clean up from the elections, do filing, machine work maybe, that kind of thing. And then the program expense, we up that with.
Yeah, we have two program expenses. Yeah. One that goes under,
the one time I was thinking of.
Yeah. There's two one times. One is on the 1451 account, which is goes for postage, which is where you're going to use rollover to cover some of that. And then you have the mainline, the 1450 account, we have program expense, which we use to pay inspectors and transport machines and,
ballots.
Pay, you know, those types of things. And there's another slide. Is that it?
I think that was it.
Okay. So, I guess at this point, be happy to take any questions if there are.
Okay, thank you, Steve. And if you could stop, share your screen.
Okay.
Resume. Or no, not new. Resume share, maybe?
Let's see. Resume? No.
There we go.
Okay. There you go. All right. Thank you both. It sounds like you're going to have a really exciting year next year. Lots of changes.
Hopefully not as exciting as last year, though.
Yes, let's hope so.
I think it's going to be really helpful that you can start counting absentee ballots in advance of the actual election. I think that'll take a lot of the stress and strain off the week immediately following election day. Leslie, you have a question.
Yes, thank you. Good to see you all. Thank you for coming this evening. How do you feel about the health of our voting machines? Get through next year's elections? I kind of expected to see that somewhere in here.
Yeah, our voting machines, most of them are, you know, well over 10 years old now, and they're still performing excellently. But they do need a lot of tender loving care. We're not quite ready to purchase new machines for main reason is ours are still working, but the other is that there's, several, machines that are going through the certification process at the state level. So it keeps our options open as to what, you know, we can purchase when we really feel that we need to.
And they're very different than what we have. The different versions of new ones available are are quite different than what we're using now. So trying to figure out what would be the best and what gets certified, we're keeping an eye on that.
What would the lead time be that you'd want to be purchasing new machines in advance of a big voting year?
Well, look, generally when you purchase, the time you get it, it's probably a 3-month turnaround, you know, get them, because there's a process you have to go through as you do with everything you buy, but, other counties have been doing it over the past few years, and they've been able to do it usually within 3 months, get a full turnover.
Do it, yeah, I guess elections. I was thinking more of the training, but yes, thank you. I want to make sure that we are ready for our next round of voting.
Okay.
Okay, Martha.
Thank you, and good to see you both. I'm curious about, you've got two additional people. I know your department is structured so you have parity on each side, you know, for each party. How does that work? Do you have, when you hire one new voting machine tech and one new clerk, do you like not have parity right now, or how's that working?
You would have parity when we, right now we have one full-time equivalent for senior voting machine technician. We split it between two people, one Democrat, one Republican, each halftime. What we're proposing is taking what we have now is two 20-hour a week senior voting machine technicians, and we want to have two 35-hour a week senior voting machine technicians. So when we get get that approved, then we would, you know, each have one full-time equivalent on each side. The clerks is a little bit different situation. It's not really like we're hiring one clerk. The clerk line has like, I think this year it's like 27. Don't have a number right handy. But next year it's likely to be about 32,000, and that is split equally among, right now it's 8 employees, but you know, they don't get benefits, but they are employees of the county, and whatever they work in aggregate cannot exceed earning 32,000. So they're very, very, very part-time, and they're only brought in to when we have, a lot of demand for work all at the same time. And in even numbered years, that number is higher because there's more, just more work on all fronts, whether it's registering voters and getting them into our database or issuing absentees or whatever. So that's the clerk line.
Okay. So that, singular additional part-time clerk, but this is just, that's the line,
right? That's money that we're adding to that line.
I see. Okay, that makes a lot of sense. When it comes to counting the absentee ballots before election day, will you still have the same kind of process where candidates would come, I know this is not really a budget issue, but where candidates would come and witness ahead of, during that whole process, the way you do it now, after the election?
That is what I understand. Obviously the law has to be signed, but the way it's written, it appears that that's what will happen. How we make that happen, we're going to take probably a lot of guidance from the New York State Board of Elections, who will promulgate a lot of the rules that, and regulations to handle, to deal with this new law.
Okay. All right. Thanks very much, Tamara and Steve. Appreciate it.
Okay. Any more questions? Seeing none. Thank you, Steve. Thank you, Tamara. Welcome, Tamara, by the way.
Thank you.
Yeah. And please enjoy the rest of your evening.
Thanks much. You too.
All right. Thank you.
Good night. Okay, guys. That's it for department presentations. This has been the fun part. We have a budget forum on Thursday, I believe, at 7.
It will be by Zoom. And then next week, we'll get down to the nitty gritty. And that's something to really look forward to, right? So have a good evening, everybody, and thank you.